Hello there, everyone. Welcome to the TSG podcast. Just a huge disclaimer before we begin that all content produced on this channel is for education and entertainment purposes only. Enjoy the episode. All right. Good morning, everyone. I'm here with my co-host, Sean, and we have another episode of the TSG podcast today. Morning, Sean.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing pretty good. And I got a lot of questions for you today. I hope you don't mind. This is going to be a crypto slash Bitcoin talk today because there's a lot of things going on in the market right now. One of which I read an article earlier this morning written by Jack Denton or Jack. I think Jack Denton. Mm-hmm. I don't recall the name because I can't find the article anymore. But the article is pretty much saying that Bitcoin went below $30,000 again per coin, and that the fear of a recession looming in the horizon is having investors panic and pretty much dumping their crypto slash Bitcoin investments. What is your opinion on that? I thought that the idea of cryptocurrency was to protect against inflation being one, and as well as a recession. Do you see the reasoning for selling off a good portion of crypto slash Bitcoin investments as of right now?
Well, there's different people in the market with different theses, you know. So there are a lot of people. The Bitcoin price has been moving with the NASDAQ pretty well.
Okay.
And that seems to be because a lot of investors have basically said, you know, they look at Bitcoin and they say, what am I going to do with this thing? I don't, you know, maybe they don't understand it or whatever. And they say, well, look, it's kind of like a new technology play. Mm-hmm. So I'll consider it kind of like a NASDAQ company, like a tech company. And I'll just trade it like that. So in that kind of a scenario, if we have an economic recession, that's not so good for that type of asset.
Ah, I see. So Bitcoin going below 30,000 with the fear of the market, it makes sense then, to your understanding, into, well, at least I'm still questioning it, but it makes somewhat sense then.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, from that standpoint, it does. Also, okay. 29,000. If we look back at the price for about a month or two, we can see that it has dipped below that a little bit, like it went to 28 something a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it's been ranging really between 29,000 and like 31,000-32,000. So it's still within the same range that it's been in for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's below about 29,500 for the first time in maybe 2 weeks. But that's not a completely unusual price for Bitcoin recently, you know.
Okay, but it is kind of because earlier this year it was quite high, was it not?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's take a look at where it was. Let's say in April it was in 47,000.
Wow. So from 47,000 down to 29,000, 31,000. That's a huge drop. I mean, if I invested in Bitcoin in April and it went down 25%, I think that's roughly around 25%. Correct me if I'm wrong, but 40,000 down to 30,000 is around that ballpark. Or is it 50,000 around to
47 to 29. So yeah, more than... that's pretty spicy.
It's a hot potato that we're dropping, man. Yeah. I mean, oh gosh, if I invested in Bitcoin at that time, woo! Oh, my life savings. Oh my gosh. But yeah, I mean, I get why investors are scared right now because that's a big spicy potato that we're dropping. Jeez. Mm-hmm. So, and that is just what's happening recently. So for those of you who don't know overall or don't understand it, like I don't understand this whole crypto world. I still don't, even after how many episodes have we been doing this? What, 3-4 episodes just strictly on crypto/Bitcoin? Yeah. Mainly Bitcoin, because that's what you are an expert in. And so I'm still confused. So why don't we take a step back? Because I know we've kind of talked about this off podcast, but help me out, because mm-hmm. I'm still trying to understand what the whole idea of what is money?
Yes, that is a great place to start. So it really is, because Bitcoin was and is an attempt to create a new type of money.
Okay. So that much I understand. So I get it. It's a brand new way to make money. Okay, I get that. All right, continue on.
There's been different attempts to define what money is. A very pithy definition that I heard recently was money is the most liquid good. So that's an interesting... Because one interesting way to theorize about money is to look at extreme situations that were different from ours. Because we live in a situation where our money is the U.S. dollar, and when you ask, you know, advanced economists, what is this thing? Like, they have a hard time explaining it to you. So, but you can go back in history and find situations where the answer to what is money was simplified. So for example, sometimes in prisons, people use cigarettes as money.
Okay. And we saw that in the Shawshank Redemption, for those of you who didn't see the film, but yes. Okay. I get that. I get. Okay.
For those of you who didn't see the film, see it.
It's a great film.
Yeah. It's one of the greats.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so the most liquid good would be cigarettes. You can divide them up, right? You mm-hmm. can buy something for one or two or three cigarettes.
Okay.
And even people who don't smoke might want to trade things for cigarettes, because then you could trade it for something else, you know?
Okay.
And that's, you know, that's when it really starts to take on money characteristics. Mm. Now, in economics, the most common definition of money is that money there's three characteristics of money. It can be a store of value, it can be a medium of exchange, and it can be a unit of account. Mm. And you can think of these things as like levels.
Mm-hmm.
So like, there's things that are a store of value, but they may not necessarily be a medium of exchange or a unit of account. Mm. So if someone is very wealthy, they might want to maintain their wealth by diversifying and spreading it out across different things. They could buy some stocks, they could buy some houses, mm-hmm. and they could store their wealth in those things, you know? And so in a way, a lot of things can take on a store of value characteristic. If you have something that you think you'll be able to sell in the future, then you can store value in it. And so that's kind of the foundational level of being money.
Okay, so hold on. So would that be analogous to what's going on today with the baseball card, Pokemon card, arts in general, where we're putting money and purchasing these items as it might potentially be a storage of wealth, and then in the future we can sell it and we get back what we pay for it? Or is this something that's way before this?
So that is, I think that phenomenon is related.
Okay.
And I think part of the issue is some stores of value are better or worse.
Mm.
And with our unique monetary system, the government has been basically trying to make the dollar
mm-hmm.
not be the ideal store value, right? If you take a bunch of dollars and stick them under your mattress for 10 years, then when you go back and pull those out and go to spend it, you will be able to buy less things.
Okay.
So that the government's doing that on purpose. And this causes, the more they do that, the more people look elsewhere. And they're going to go way out into different stores of value. So typically baseball cards would mainly be for, you know, baseball enthusiasts and people who are really into that sort of thing. But because people need to look for more stores of value in our current environment, a lot of people who are maybe less, not super into baseball or would not have thought about owning baseball cards will now get into it.
So wait, how's the government forcing us to go look for different storage of wealth right now? I mean, I get the whole analogy with the $10,000 in a mattress, and it's not worth the same buying power. So that's inflation. So is it just because of inflation, or is there other things that you know are being implemented in the economy?
I would say it's mainly because of inflation.
Okay. All right.
I mean, that's not a dumb question, though. I had to think about it for a second. But yeah, I do think it's mainly because of inflation.
Okay.
You know, if back, say, 500 years ago, people's main money might have been gold coins. And if you stick that under your mattress and go back to it 10 years or even 50 years later, you still have the same level of purchasing power.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Okay.
So, so the government has engineered inflation for a variety of reasons. You know, it funds government spending. It helps them stabilize the prices and make sure that we don't have deflation.
Okay.
That's what they'll say the main reason is. You know, it may be true. I think it's kind of true.
Eventually it's you know, it was originally theorized for doing good for the economy, right? So it wasn't like, I have some hidden agenda, I'm gonna alter the market so that I'm the only one that gets the money. I think it was mainly theorized for the betterment of the overall global economy, right? And so but it just went out of hand, would you say? Or
I don't think it was ultimately for the betterment of the overall global economy. I mean, that was maybe...
maybe under the past circumstance it was. Now, today, obviously, things change, times change, right? So, I mean, back when we went off the gold standard, I know we were totally off topic with what is money, by the way. Uh-huh. But, you know, when we went off the gold standard back then, it was mainly to help the U.S. economy pay back its debt or defer its debt. At least that's to my understanding. Back in the 70s, I think it was in the 70s when we went off the gold standard.
Well, so we went off the gold standard. So the dollar was pegged to gold.
Yes.
And we were, our job was to essentially to only issue dollars that we could actually back with our gold.
Yes.
But the U.S. issued extra dollars.
Okay.
And some of the European countries called their bluff. And we went off the gold standard. I do think to some extent there is a plan of people enriching themselves through the system, for sure.
Well, I think that's with any system, right? I mean, there's always going to be some loophole that people are going to find, right?
Yeah. But earlier you were saying like it's designed for the betterment of humanity and not necessarily for these nefarious purposes. I think they're trying to do both, kind of, because the Federal Reserve is owned by banks. It's kind of a government institution, but it's almost more of a bank institution, and they run it more for their purposes. However, they do want the United States to be a healthy, thriving country because they want to live here and they want to spend their money here, right? So
okay.
It's not like they are trying to destroy America, but they are also trying to enrich themselves, essentially.
Okay, so here's my next question, because we kind of touch on what is money. And so money is more of a philosophical thing. It's more of a trust thing where both parties trust that the exchange of whatever thing that you're exchanging for another service is, you know, of that value, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going from money, and now we're bringing in banks and governments. So my question now is, what is a bank? Right? Because a bank is where money is created. At least if you look at, at past history, banks used to be the ones, you know, different types of banks used to be the ones to issue different types of paper currency. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of centralized that to a central main bank and a Federal Reserve, yada, yada, yada. Again, this is to my understanding. I'm not very good with this stuff, but now I'm asking, then what is a bank? And how does that relate to digital currency? Because now banks are creating their own coins. They're creating their own currency, as we've seen when they created their paper currency back in the 20s, 30s, 50s, and 60s. So what is a bank? And how does this relate to the current crypto market, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, etc.?
So banks essentially do two things.
Okay.
Number one is they will hold on to people's money as deposits. So you can deposit money in the bank and they'll keep it safe for you. They'll put it in a vault.
Yes.
That's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing banks will do would be to make loans.
Yes.
Now, because so much of our money is electronic, it's not necessarily the case anymore that they have to take the deposits and make loans.
Mm.
What they can do is just, you walk in, you ask for a loan. They just type in the numbers into the computer. Now that money's in your account. Mm-hmm. And then they also type in on the other side of the ledger that you owe them that money in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a way, they no longer necessarily have to touch the deposits.
Mm.
Although in theory, I mean, it gets tricky. Banks, the financial system loves to create more and more convoluted ideas, but to get the simple idea of what a bank is, it's just they take deposits and then they loan money out.
Okay. Well, okay. So okay, I get that, because, you know, I go to the bank, I deposit my money, you know, deposit my paycheck there every week, every month kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I will withdraw money. Yeah. And mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, you do need to take out a car loan or a house loan, mortgage, whatever. And the banks are generally going to be the first place that people will look to get these types of loans.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I get all of that. But if we're keeping money in a bank, and they're loaning out money, then how much of the money is still in the bank? That sounds a very confusing question.
No, it makes sense. Because, yeah, so if okay. Let's say you put in $100
mm-hmm.
and they loan out $90,
mm-hmm.
Then they still have 10 of your dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go around asking people, how much money do you have? Mm-hmm. You will think of your bank account and say you have $100. Mm-hmm. And the guy they loaned the 90 to
mm-hmm.
will say he has $90. So now in existence, there's $190. We mm-hmm. started with 100, and now the money in existence has expanded to 190.
Okay.
So that's part of the money creation process. And then the amount that they keep, they have to keep enough so that when people come asking for their money, they're able to give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the government sometimes will regulate that amount and mm-hmm. tell them, hey, you need, you know, a certain amount of money. I think after the 2008 crisis, what they've been doing is
25% going.
Well, what they've been doing is going bank by bank and okay. saying, like they did this thing called a stress test. I don't know. I think they still do this every like 2 or 3 years, but they'll basically say the government regulators will go to the bank and say, hey, we're going to pretend that there's a run on the bank right now. And all these, you know, this number of people has showed up at your door to get their deposits. Mm-hmm. Show us your books and show us whether you can actually provide those deposits. Them? Yeah. Okay. So they'll do stuff like that. And that allows the banks a certain amount of flexibility where they can basically judge how much risk they want to take, you know, but they have to be within certain parameters, you know?
Yeah. Cause I remember reading that, you know, for most banks, they should be having in their vaults at all times, roughly around 15 to 30% in cash. So that if there was some sort of run on their money, where it was like a 1929 episode again, that they would have enough to at least give out for the time being. But that's a very interesting concept because, and so with that, and I don't mean to change the topic too fast, but I do want to try to connect this with digital currency because digital currency, isn't that like a credit card? Okay, so now we're going from banks to actual digital currency that we as the average individual are using. We're not using Bitcoin yet, just yet as a form of payment, right? Mm-hmm. In some companies, they will accept, you know, Bitcoin like Tesla, but mostly the digital currency, quote unquote, that we're using is what we call line of credit, where we're using a credit card, which is backed by the bank or issued by the bank. So how is that different from a coin-based currency, a digital coin? So we do have digital currency, it's credit. How's that any different?
The idea behind Bitcoin was to eliminate the middleman and the people who are keeping track of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So with the way we use digital dollars now, there's someone keeping track, whether it's the people who run your ATM card at your bank or, you know, the credit card company like you were talking about, they are keeping track of the whole thing. And there are people who are concerned that they can play games with that, you know, and especially the game of creating money, which a lot of people do not like. So with Bitcoin, the idea was we're going to create a ledger, a digital ledger that is that you can't mess with it. It is essentially unforgeable, and nobody can create their own money. There's only a certain amount of money, and the ledger essentially won't allow you to create new money. It won't allow you to spend the same money twice, and it creates a hard money, like a digital gold, right?
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's the idea behind that.
All right, so I know we talked about this in the last episodes on Bitcoin. So the reason why it's unforgeable is because of the Bitcoin technology, the blockchain, where the ledger is being verified by, like, say, 20 different sources for the same ledger. And so this is more of a public transparency in terms of the booking. I'm on the right track, yes?
Yes.
Okay. And so I guess, and this is me just also reading from the cryptocurrency book that I was sharing a couple of weeks back, further into the chapters. So the idea is that with the public transparency of these ledgers, the institutions right now that are controlling the current ledgers, they're not public, yes?
Yes.
That means we can't go in and verify that they are indeed correct in terms of the mathematics.
Correct.
Okay. And so Bitcoin and all these other crypto coins are pretty much trying to have the central bank or the banks in general obsolete, in essence. So the industry, they're trying to destroy the whole entire industry, yes? Because
you, yeah, you could say that.
Okay.
I mean, maybe not. There, you know, there's different, different Bitcoiners will have a different philosophy. Some people think the system will coexist.
Okay.
With the dollar system, and basically it would just be a reserve asset, kind of like how people still use gold
as a reserve.
Yeah, they use it as a reserve. They use it pretty much as a store of value, but in the United States, people aren't using gold as a medium of exchange. Like, we're not taking gold coins to the grocery store or silver coins or anything, but people will still buy gold coins as a store of value. So,
okay. I mean, technically, you could buy a silver coin that has a legal tender on it. Like, say it's a $5 and use that for $5. But why would you? Because it's what? However many ounces of silver coin is.
Right. Yeah.
It wouldn't make sense to use that as a form of exchange. Okay. So this is interesting. The reason why is because several years ago, I actually read two books. I can't recall the name of the two books, but I do recall the authors of the two books. One was, I think it was like The Death of Currency. I can't recall the actual title. But it was written by, I think, James Rickman. And the other one, I think it was more of an interview rather than his book, but it was written by Jim Rogers. And they both explained the idea of what currency was. And they said that once paper currency, once everything goes digitized, then it's going to be really hard for the common person to, you know, pretty much have a fair playing field in terms of spending in the economy. Because if the government is, if all the money is in a digital form where the government can see everything, then it's going to be like, oh, well, you know, we're having economic crisis today, so we were going to need to charge everyone, say, 10% out of their accounts so that we can fix out these charges. And with the snap of the finger on a digital platform, that could easily be done. Is that what Bitcoin, again, I'm heavily like paraphrasing what they were trying to say, but is that essentially what Bitcoin and all these other crypto coins is trying to prevent? Is with a snap of a finger, you know, we're trying to prevent, you know, money just vanishing in general?
Yes, I think so. I think there are a lot of, you know, politicians and people in charge who are looking forward to a system where they run it and they can see all the transactions that everyone is doing, and they can make those choices to reach into people's bank accounts and change whatever. And I think that could be very dangerous. And I think that doesn't align with the way America was set up and the principles behind it. And so I'm kind of hoping that America doesn't go that way and finds a different way to go. But yes, I think what they're describing is definitely a concern. And I do want to go back a little bit. A few minutes ago, you were talking about people verifying the Bitcoin ledger. I just looked it up. The number of Bitcoin nodes that are verifying the ledger is at least 16,000.
16,000?
Yeah.
I said, what, 30?
Yeah, you said like 25 or 30 or something.
Wow, 16,000. And these are random accounts verifying, right? So there is no way that we could trace them and be able to alter any of those. Right. Like, these are always randomized. And depending on which node is doing the algorithm the fastest, that's the one that's generally going to...
So there's the nodes who are doing verification, and then there are the miners.
Okay.
And those can actually be separate things.
Oh.
So the miners, I don't want to go too deep into the all the details, but I'll talk about this distinction. The miners are consuming energy in order to secure the network and to get the block reward, which is an amount of Bitcoin that gets issued every 10 minutes. And they also get any fees on the network. So that's what the miners are doing. But you can also run what people call a node. It's essentially a verifier. And it's also the server through which transactions get onto the network. So when you do a Bitcoin transaction, it goes to a node first. Mm-hmm. And the nodes are not burning electricity. I mean, they use a little bit of electricity to do their thing, but they're not they're not doing the mining thing that actually consumes electricity just to do proof of work. Mm. So the nodes are just sitting there verifying the transactions. So when you submit a transaction, the node makes sure that it's, you know, possible. It checks it before it goes to the miner. And then when a miner succeeds in finding a block, the nodes will all check that block, verify the encryption, and make sure that this is actually a valid block.
Hmm.
And so, yeah, a lot of people all over the world are participating in the verification process.
Interesting. Okay. Oh, this is heavy stuff already. And so now I'm gonna continue on. So we talked about what is money. We talked about what is a bank somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started going into the actual process of digital currency and, you know, Bitcoin and how it works with the blockchain. So now my next question, and I'm really, really just curious about this. So my next question is, all right, so we got the miners, we got the nodes, we got the verification platforms. I want to recall back to when I was incredibly confused during our last episode when we're talking about Bitcoin, about layer one, layer two, layer, what the heck are these onion layers? Because layer one, I can see is like just currency in general. That's us trading money. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or is that not correct? So what are the layers?
So you can think of all different types of money as having layers, essentially. So with if we go to the gold standard, let's say,
okay,
there was gold in the Federal Reserve, and then they would issue the dollars, and you could say the dollars were like the second layer, right?
Oh, okay.
And the idea was that it's pieces of paper, and we could have smaller pieces of it. There's a lot of benefits to using these paper dollars instead of just trading the gold around, right?
Okay, so the main layer, the bottom layer of the triangle, the base layer, is the actual valuable thing that we're trading.
Yes.
So it's like gold. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's layer one.
Mm-hmm.
Layer two is the paper money that's backed up by gold at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because paper money is a lot easier to carry around. That's the convenience factor. Yeah.
Yep.
And so, would it be safe to say that layer three is the credit line that we have today, where instead of carrying paper money, we just carry a plastic card that has a magnetic strip on it and we can do exchanges that way?
Yeah, I think you could definitely say that.
Okay. Is there a layer four?
I mean,
I don't think so, right?
I don't think so.
Okay, okay. So. So, I mean, yeah. We have a three-layer system. Well, technically two, because we're no longer backed by the gold standard, but a three-ish layer system in today's economy, yeah?
Yeah, and the idea is, I started there because you can see the point of having different layers is because of trade-offs, right?
Okay.
There are benefits to using the different layers.
Yes.
There's sort of conveniences and better facilitation of trade and economic activity, right?
Yes.
And so with Bitcoin, it also makes sense to try and have different layers. So on the main Bitcoin blockchain, if I want to send you $10, then what's going to happen is I submit my transaction. I'm going to have to pay a fee,
yes,
to the miner to be included. Now, what is that fee? That fee can vary. If everyone is trying to use the network at the same time, the fees will go up.
Okay.
This hasn't happened very often, but it's happened a few times.
Okay.
And so, you know, in theory, if I want to send you $10, maybe the fee is going to be like $7. And so then it's like, well, wait a minute. I don't necessarily want to do that.
Okay. So isn't the fees like a credit card fee, or just like, you know, how when I purchase like food from Uber Eats or
you know, whatever other food delivery system there's like a delivery fee. Is that kind of like what it is?
Kind of. Yeah. Okay. The fee on the Bitcoin blockchain, the fee gets paid to the miner.
Got it.
And that's to incentivize them to secure the network.
Okay.
And because if there's less miners, if there were only a few people mining Bitcoin in the world, then it would be easy to hack. Mm-hmm. With more miners, it makes it difficult to hack the Bitcoin network.
But with more miners, that means you're going to have higher fees because you got to pay each. You got to compensate each of those miners. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that's layer one.
So that's layer one. Yeah. Okay. And another thing we might want to consider for trade-offs is on layer one, if I send you $10, we might have to wait a while for that transaction to clear. It could take 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay.
So those are two issues where we could address it with a layer two. So I think the most popular layer two these days is Lightning.
Okay.
And that is a system where there's a network of people who have set up, they did a Bitcoin or they started a Bitcoin transaction with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they have it, they leave it open so that they can swap Bitcoin back and forth. And then later on, 6 months, a year from now, they could close that transaction. And it's just one transaction on the Bitcoin blockchain.
Okay.
They could do many smaller transactions within that. And so then those people have created a network so that I could send a small amount of money to you through that network. I could send you, you know, a dollar and I could pay a fee of a fraction of a cent.
Okay. So here's a visual that I'm seeing in my brain. Okay. And I just want to describe this to the viewers as well, because it might help them out. So imagine that we have two people making a transaction on a digital network, right? And it's like a single line, right? So from person A to person B, there's a single line, and this is what we can call the blockchain, where it takes 15 minutes, 20 minutes to verify, and it has a high fee for the miners. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So that's layer one. And so layer two, from what I'm getting, is that they're going to have this highway open, but in the highway, now instead of a single line, it is a person going into the line is connected to like a building where it has like 100 Bitcoins in there, and then connecting to person B. And within this 100 coin building, more people can, you know, pretty much insert themselves to do trades inside this building, but the 100 coins stays inside the building.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that okay? So yeah. It's acting like a mini bank for other people to use, because now the area is open for transaction. And because all the coins are in that little box, you don't need a miner fee because it's already there.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. So that's the image I'm getting in my brain. All right. So now, if that's the analogy, then couldn't the current banking system right now do that, where they do a layer two type of thing? They purchase a whole bunch of Bitcoin right now. Say that, you know, the bank down the street, Bank ABC, purchase 1,000 Bitcoin in their portfolio, and they just open up a box where 1,000 Bitcoins are there, and people can just do transactions inside there.
So banks could do that.
And then they get the miner fee, right? Because they're the ones that are verifying all of that inside that digital space, right?
Not exactly the miner fee. Layer two has its own fees.
Okay. Okay.
So there's a variety of different layer twos, and one type of layer two is actually an exchange, like a place where you could go to buy Bitcoin. So, and this is something that people do use in the way that you're talking about in other countries.
Like,
I think I heard from someone in Argentina. So basically, if someone in Argentina wants to go and buy some Bitcoin, they would go onto an exchange I think they would go on Bitfinex.
Okay.
And so Bitfinex is a company that will sell you Bitcoin for your money. Okay. And they also have a lot of other digital currencies on there. And you can, people go on there to trade. And there's traders on there who are trying to make money by, you know, shorting and day trading and stuff.
Okay.
But what you could do is just keep the money on there. Like, it's an app on your phone. Mm-hmm. So you go on there, you buy some Bitcoin, and you just leave it there. And then you are talking to some other person in Argentina that you want to buy something from. Mm-hmm. And it turns out, since pretty much everyone uses this exchange, you could just send it to their account on the exchange. And so that is something that people do. And that is considered to be a layer two as well.
Because it's really quick. It doesn't take 15, 20 minutes, right?
Yep. So yeah, because the exchange is not doing the transaction on layer one. It's just moving the Bitcoin around on layer two. And someday later, they'll finalize it on layer one.
So is Coinbase a layer two? Because Coinbase is the company, right? It was the first company to open up, I think, in the United States to hold all these different types of crypto.
Mm-hmm.
So Coinbase is a layer two? Isn't it that an exchange area as well?
Yes.
Okay. So you see how well versed I am in this. I don't invest into, I've never opened an account in Coinbase. So I'm trying to understand what the heck everything is. So, okay. Cool. So we talked about layer two. We talked a little bit about the Coinbase, the different coin exchange platforms. And that you could have it as a layer two. Is there a layer three in this coin realm?
There can be.
Okay.
There can be.
But right now it's not really being implemented because it's not of a practical means just yet. Yeah.
So there's a lot of ideas out there. There's a lot of projects. I'm trying to think of a good example of a layer three.
Okay.
But I know there's definitely more layer three type stuff going on outside of Bitcoin in altcoins. People, that's just where a lot of the random experimentation is taking place.
Okay.
So
help us understand an example project that's currently happening. It doesn't have to be a good one, but just help us because layer one is two people exchanging and then gets verified by a miner. Fine. We get that. It's like me giving you 5 quarters for a candy bar, like face to face. It's on par with something very similar to that. And we have a separate person verifying that we made that transaction. Yeah. Layer two is like two people going into a bank to do an exchange or opening up their own bank and allowing other people to do exchange within that building. It doesn't have to be a bank, but it's a building. And at the end of the day or at the end of the week, then we close it and verify all the transaction. That's layer two. Yeah. And there's varieties of different types of layer two, like you told me, but that's the one that sticks with me.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so what would a layer three be? So those are my two visuals, at least for layer one, layer two. So what's a layer three?
So I can't think of, there is a project called Taro that is under construction. That's basically trying to create smart contracts and different types of, even new types of tokens on top of the Lightning layer two.
Okay. Interesting. So these tokens.
So they could do things like a stablecoin, right? They could do.
Okay.
So a stablecoin is when you have a digital token that is supposed to match a dollar and it remains stable according to the dollar.
So is that the whole like Luna thing that we were seeing?
The Luna thing, that was an attempt to create a different type of stablecoin that was a bad idea.
Okay. The Terra coin was the one that was backed by the US dollar, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you imagine you want to make a stablecoin, and imagine you want to use a stablecoin.
Okay.
What you would like is for the person, the people running the stablecoin, they should basically have a dollar to back up every dollar that you're using, right? If you go to them and say, hey, give me one of these dollar coins.
Okay.
They should take your dollar and they should just hold it, right? Because if something bad happens, they still have the dollar to back the thing, right? If
okay.
The problem is this idea attracts people who would want to play games with that money that they're supposed to be holding on to. And the Terra USD thing was they were trying to rig up a weird system where basically it would be automatically stabilized by the market just being able to trade things.
Okay.
And so they wouldn't necessarily have to hold all this money, which just it didn't work and it's probably never going to work.
Well, doesn't that resemble a digital bank then? Because that's what banks did. That we're going back to like 30 minutes ago when we're talking about what is a bank. Isn't that what a bank does? You give me money and I'm going to loan out the money, but I'm not going to hold all the money here. Right?
Yeah. So
were they trying to change, like turn a layer two, which is a building that has 1,000 coins in it, for instance. And, you know, each of those 1,000 coins is converted to a numerical value. So a Bitcoin right now is whatever the price is 30,000, right? So that's 30,000 US dollars. Say that I have a layer two, I have 1,000 coins, and each coin's $30,000, but we want to create a fractional coin called a stable coin, where one coin is equivalent to one US dollar in terms of Bitcoin. Right? You have a building. So say that you have a building, and it maximum it can hold is 1,000 Bitcoins. So 30,000 multiply 30 US $1,000 for a conversion from one Bitcoin to US dollars is 30,000. If I have 1,000 Bitcoin in a building, in a digital building, that's a layer two, that means maximum it can hold is, what is it, 30 million? 30 million? Something like that? Whatever. And so to use currency within that building instead of, you know, passing out these fractional Bitcoins, then I will just issue for every one Bitcoin, it's 30,000, you know, D coins, which is a stable coin that is equivalent to one US dollar. Is that what a layer three is, where it's just an easier, instead of looking at 0.00003 Bitcoins, now you have one stable coin or one D coin, whatever it is?
No, I think I probably shouldn't have really gone into layer three, because the layer three I brought up, the layer three I brought up is really just kind of piggybacking on the network.
Okay.
But
okay.
It's not about using the Bitcoin to sort of make a stable coin, because you wouldn't want to mix Bitcoin and dollars in that kind of scenario. That's also a mistake that the Terra people made, is they said, oh, we're going to buy some Bitcoin to back this dollar. And it's like, well, if the price of Bitcoin goes down, that, you know, against the dollar, right? If you want to back a dollar with, if you want to back this digital dollar, you should back it with regular dollars. So I brought up that layer three Taro system. Okay. That's more of a technical way of piggybacking on the network and doing more complex financial things utilizing the network.
Okay.
But not necessarily underpinning it with real Bitcoins. So I mean, I could do more research on layer threes, but I'm trying to not be too confused.
Okay, so here I think I have a perfect example then. If we're piggybacking off of layer two network, right? Essentially, this is gonna sound really silly, essentially it's like going to a Dave and Buster's or Chuck E. Cheese, where the tokens are not of a value, but it's a way to do quick transactions, within the layer itself.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that's a good way to
say. Is that a better way to say? Because you go into a Dave and Buster's, Chuck E. Cheese, or wherever there's a prize money, you know, carnival type games, you're exchanging real money for a token, yeah? And then you can use that token within the premise itself to exchange it for other goods and services. But it's only within that building.
Yes.
So that's a layer three. So layer one is like gold, is the actual Bitcoin itself. Layer two is the building that contains a set number of coins. And layer three is going in further, where now we have these tokens and we can exchange it for goods and services in the network itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good way to describe it.
Okay. Woo! I'm a very visual person, so I hope this is helping me, everyone. Because that makes total sense. Because if we look at GameStop, they're trying to develop their own token, right? Their own layer three. I see that as a layer three then, because GameStop, if they're building their own NFT program or token program, their initial layer is like money. The second layer is like, okay, well, if you put in money, real money, into our platform, then you can purchase video games within the platform, right? And layer three is like gamer tokens, where, you know, every time you purchase a game, you get like 100 gamer tokens. I mean, that's what Nintendo is doing too with their Nintendo Online system, the store system, where every purchase you get like 50 tokens, and you can redeem those tokens for a monetary value later or trade it in for another game. Something like that. Is that kind of making sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, we're actually seeing this already in the gaming sector. That's awesome. All right, cool. I never looked at it as a layer one, layer two, layer three. This is awesome. As you guys know, I'm very big into the gaming world, so I'm trying to like connect a lot of stuff with stuff that I know, and this totally is making a lot more sense now. All right, so that's layer three, right? And so, why is there huge fluctuations in the market now? I know that we talked about in the past that we are trying to pretty much keep mining the Bitcoin to a point where it's stabilized, right? You talked about that step graph a while back. I forgot what it was called. The stock to flow, exactly. And we agreed, or at least it looks like based on the module, that, you know, a Bitcoin can go up to, you know, be worth $1 million, $2 million USD in the far future. Might not be near future, but far future. Yeah. And so I recall reading an article on the Barron's where it was an opinionated article, but they pretty much said that Bitcoin could reach around $250,000, but it will take about a decade or a couple decades. What is your take on that? Do you think that Bitcoin can reach $250,000, and will it take that long?
I don't think it would take that long. It's hard to predict the future, obviously. But I think it depends. I mean, I think the critical thing to think about with Bitcoin is the scarcity.
Okay.
There's no more. You're only going to get so much Bitcoin. You know, there's Bitcoin being created, but it's being created by an algorithm, and it's going to stop. And we know when it's going to stop. And the traditional financial system has typically dealt with things where you can get more. And I don't think they're ready for something where there's just, when people want to come buy it, there's not a way to increase the supply. It's just people come to buy it, the price has to go up.
So it's a finite, it's extremely finite. It's not infinite. Yeah. Where with gold, the reason why the gold pricing hasn't changed in a while is because we're mining more gold out of the ground at a steady rate, right?
Yep.
Versus if there was no more gold left in the world, right? All the pricing of gold would just skyrocket to whatever means. And so,
And if you think about gold mining, gold mining costs money.
Yes.
And if the price of gold were to double, then that means the gold miners could do much more expensive types of mining now, mm-hmm. because they're going to get paid more for that mining. So as the price goes up, new supply gets unlocked, and the supply growth will accelerate until it reaches a new equilibrium. Right.
Okay.
With Bitcoin, that's not going to happen. People want more. They're just buying what's there. And when there's hardly any left, then people are going to have to fight vigorously if they want any of it. You know,
well, that's if they stay on the Bitcoin network, right? I mean, there could be another network that opens up and people can move their trust and value in Bitcoin into something that's, say, a new technology, right? So it's only until we stop believing in Bitcoin that's when things will be an issue.
You could say the same thing for silver.
Yes.
And gold.
Absolutely.
And there's a limited desire for everyone to switch to silver because of its different characteristics, right?
Yes.
So the other cryptocurrencies could steal some of the demand of Bitcoin, but they have a limited ability to do so.
Okay.
Because Bitcoin is sort of the original, in a way, it's got the best brand. It's got the least amount of risks. If you look at the second most popular cryptocurrency, it's Ethereum.
Yes.
And there's the number of risks ahead for Ethereum is like night and day. There's a lot of concerns about the complexity of the Ethereum system. There's a lot of changes that are going to be happening over the next few years. I mean, they've got, you know, deep structural changes planned every year for the next like 5 years, basically. So it's a pretty different set of trade-offs. And if you have a really sophisticated understanding of cryptocurrencies, I think you would see them actually as completely separate asset classes. Okay. A lot of people don't see it that way.
I don't.
But I think it's just a matter of digging in and understanding what the different ones are trying to do.
Okay.
And realizing that at best it's like silver and gold, but it's almost more like gold versus a business, you know.
Interesting. All right, so let's stick on the analogy with silver and gold for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's assume that Bitcoin's gold and Ethereum is silver, right? And we're in the new era. We're all on this Coinbase type of currency. So this is all theoretical at this moment, hypothetical stuff. But let's say that we are comparing apples to apples, oranges to oranges. What gold and silver has, at least in terms of its practical value, is that we can use gold and silver in our industries. We can use gold as jewelry. We can use them as plating inside electronics. Silver, same thing. We have a lot of silver plating. We can use them in old school photography as well for, you know, developing photos on a photo paper. Not photo paper, but you get what I'm saying, I hope. And so there's some practical use inside other industries for gold and silver. So my question is, if Bitcoin and Ethereum is analogous to that, then what do they have that other industries can use, right? What is their innate value if it's very similar to gold? Is there one, or are we comparing it to the wrong thing?
I would say...
Reason why I think that gold and silver has maintained its value over the past couple of centuries, millennia even, is because we can use it and it's a tangible item. And this is my whole point going back to our first time we talked about this. It's something that's tangible that we can hold, we can see, we can use, and people can see the value of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why jewelry is such a big thing, is that when we wear jewelry, when we wear our expensive watches or our expensive, you know, necklaces, people can see it and it gives us some sort of status symbol, right? But I don't think people are going to go around with Bitcoin on a necklace. that's flashing digitally and showing that, hey, I'm full of Bitcoin or I'm full of Ethereum, right? And so how would a average person be able to see the practicalness or the aestheticsness that Bitcoin and Ethereum have? And is there one? Because I know this is very hard. This is probably not apples to apples or oranges to oranges at this moment, but I'm trying to understand, is there another application besides currency itself that it can be used in other industries? That's the main crux of my question.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yes.
One thing I will mention is someone went on the Joe Rogan podcast like a month or so ago.
Okay.
And they had a hardware wallet, you know, like a hardware wallet is like a way to store your Bitcoin physically on like a USB thing.
Okay.
It has a, you know, a secure chip inside of it.
Yes.
This guy had it on a necklace.
Oh,
so okay. He was wearing a necklace with a hardware wallet that presumably had cryptocurrency on it. So in a way he was using it as jewelry, perhaps.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So there could be ways where essentially people might want to somehow show off or brag about their ownership of cryptocurrencies, and they could theoretically do that. Mm. Now, but we could set that aside, because I think a key part of your question was this idea of using it for something in the way that gold and silver has these industrial uses.
Yes.
I would say the answer is no.
Okay.
I mean, there's an aspect of mining we might want to come back to, but in general, I would say it is really designed to be just currency. And okay. There are things in the history of money that kind of functioned that way. I mean,
okay.
In a way, the dollar is one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just currency. It doesn't do anything else. Okay. You know, there was I may have brought this up before, but there were these Pacific Islanders. I believe it was called the Island of Yap.
Okay.
And they created these stones called rye stones that were essentially discs that were carved out of limestone,
mm-hmm.
which was somewhat hard to come by. And they carved it into a pattern. It was sort of like a disc with kind of a flower pattern on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they used that as money. And that's also an example of money that doesn't do anything else. I mean, it does have that visual aesthetic quality,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have any uses.
Mm.
So I believe that money doesn't necessarily have to have a use.
Okay.
So there's that factor. Now, I don't know if this plays into it, but mining can come invaluable in certain scenarios. For example, when there's some place where you could produce energy for really cheap, but it's stranded. It's far away from civilization.
Uh-huh.
And so you say, well, there's no point in using that energy. Let's say you have a hydroelectric thing, but it's way out in the boonies. Mm-hmm. And if you were to transmit that energy to the city, you would lose most of it in transmission. So people would say, well, we'll just shut that plant down and not use it. But you could actually bring Bitcoin miners out there and make money off that stranded energy. And I don't know if that gives Bitcoin monetary value necessarily, but it is sort of a way in which Bitcoin mining has been actually kind of plugging into the industrial system in a beneficial way.
So it's more of an eco-friendly approach, would you say, like a zero carbon type of thing? Like, I mean, yeah, you're pretty much destroying the landscape to do hydroelectric or windmill or solar, right? But it's a way to use electricity without polluting. In the essence of carbon emission. Now, there's many different types of pollution. I'm not going to go into that because as a scientist, I'm not going to go into that right now. Uh-huh. But that's what I'm seeing. Yeah.
Yeah. Specifically the greenness and carbon intensity of Bitcoin, there's a whole discussion to be had around that.
Yes.
You know, there is the issue. People who are pro Bitcoin basically point out the fact that if you go to build some renewable energy things, they like take solar and wind. When the sun is shining and the wind is blowing, you're getting plenty of energy out of that. But if you really want to power a city off of that, you will need to dramatically overbuild for the times when the wind isn't blowing quite so hard and the sun isn't shining quite so bright. You would want to have this excess capacity, and that reduces the economic viability of some of these green things, because you know, you build out this excess capacity, it's not going to be used the whole time. And a lot of businessmen look at that and say, well, that's, you know, the numbers aren't adding up as well now. So if you could do Bitcoin mining with it, with the excess capacity, that then enables more overbuilding of green technology, which would then actually enable green technology to take up a larger percentage of the energy infrastructure. So which that's a key argument on that side of the ledger.
Yeah, I remember Kevin O'Leary saying something that like that at like a CryptoCon or something like that. So it's a very interesting unfolding. I'm curious to know how far the green technologies will go, especially now that these crypto coins are getting more and more involved into it, and you know, regulations are being passed for zero emission, zero carbon footprint, etc. So I'm very curious to see how far this is going to go and how this will revolutionize the energy sector. So now I'm coming on to my last question.
Okay.
And the last question is the question I've always been asking, which is investing standpoint. And so just building on top of what you said, that Bitcoin is essentially just a currency. And if we actually look at history in the past, way back when, we can see the old currencies of the Roman era, the Persian era, the old Saxon era, they all went out of date. Pretty much they became worthless. Now they are, you know, found in museums. You can look at, you know, different types of old Chinese coins, you know, metal coins, etc. But we're not using them as a form of currency anymore. So if that's the case, wouldn't Bitcoin, if it's just a currency, wouldn't that go out of date eventually? And if so, then as an investor, especially with the huge fluctuations in the crypto market, at least I'm saying, well, if there's going to be this huge price fluctuation where 2 months ago it's 40,000, 47,000, and now today it's 29,000, 30,000, then wouldn't it be better as an investor to put your money into a index fund, or just in terms of a company that you research into? As a value investor standpoint, this is my take on it. Wouldn't it be better just to put it into a company rather than invest it into crypto / Bitcoin at this moment in time?
Let's see. So I think each investor needs to make their own trade-offs. And I think that Bitcoin will grow in importance, and that the price will go up, that more people will want to purchase Bitcoin in the future. Institutions, perhaps governments beyond just El Salvador. And I think a key part of addressing your question is the idea of a portfolio and having multiple different investments in your portfolio that are doing different things, right? So if you are maybe kind of intrigued by the Bitcoin investment thesis and want to dip your toes in, you could put in maybe 1% into Bitcoin. In fact, there was a someone ran the numbers on the idea of having a portfolio that was 99% cash and 1% Bitcoin. And I think it beat the S&P 500 for every 4 or 5 year period.
Really?
Since it's existed. Yeah. So Bitcoin has a lot of volatility, and it also has a lot of upside potential. Right. And so for a lot of investors, those two things add up to having a small allocation, 1%, maybe 5%, something like that. Mm-hmm. I think Fidelity, Fidelity is a company that runs like people's 401ks and their investment portfolios and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they have, they're going forward with allowing people to own Bitcoin in their portfolio, and the max is 20%.
Wow, that's a lot.
That is a lot. I don't think they're going to be recommending that to a lot of their customers. I think they just wanted to, you know, set that as a ceiling. But I think probably a lot of their customers, they're going to, in fact, I think they've had documents recommending 5% or something.
Wow.
So, but yeah, if you're worried about that volatility, you definitely want to have some more stable things in your portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe some cash or some bonds, you know, a really common portfolio historically would be 60% stocks, 40% bonds. Mm. You know, if there's also people say there's an age trade-off, they'll say things like the percentage of bonds should basically match your age or something like that.
Mm. I've heard that too. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of interesting possibilities. I mean, if you want to go really heavy into Bitcoin, you should have a very strong conviction about the thesis and you should be ready for it to drop for a year or 2 years. You should be ready. You know, if you buy Bitcoin, just prepare for the possibility that it'll go down like, you know, 60%, 70% and just stay there for a couple of years. And are you going to sell? Is that going to freak you out? You know, if it is, then buy less basically
or don't buy at all, right?
Or don't buy at all. Yeah. Okay. Tune your purchase, tune the percentage of your portfolio to, you know, how much are you going to actually hold on to?
Oh man. So and that's the same thing with any, you know, investing that we've talked about, at least with what I do, which is understand your risk tolerance, right? And do your homework. Really, it's all about doing homework. That's what value investors, we, at least the way that I approach it, that's what I generally do. And that's why I'm constantly asking you questions about Bitcoin, because I don't understand it well enough yet. And I'm trying to understand it to see if this is something that I want to put a percentage of my portfolio in. And so thank you, Sean, again, for helping me out. So yep, no problem. Hopefully my questions weren't a little too hard today.
They were tough, but I think I did a decent job.
Awesome. And I'm hoping my visuals help, my very simplistic visuals help. So at least that's really what helps me understand this stuff. So, all right. Is there anything else that you would like to mention about what's going on currently this week or in the crypto market or anything in general before we close it out for today?
You know, the crypto market, it's down in the doldrums. But yeah, I think it'll come back at some point. I mean, it could be a while, but yeah, I'd say it'll come back. So.
Well, every ups has its downs and every downs has its ups. It's a roller coaster of emotions and a very interesting ride, to say the least, for any investor, right? So, all right. Well, I think we can call it for a day. What do you think, Sean? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you everyone so much for listening to the end of this episode. We hope that this was an informative episode, a lot about Bitcoin, a lot about crypto, a lot about understanding what money is in general. And until next time, don't trade a dollar for a penny. And we'll see you in the next episode. Take care, everyone.